And welcome back. The spotlight on education does not always fall on the classroom. There are times when the system itself gets the most attention. That's been the case in our area this past year and beyond that. Teacher strikes, funding, and administrative upheaval have been a big part of the education story in 2015. With me to talk about it is St. Louis Public Radio education reporter Dale Singer. Dale, thanks for coming in.
Always a pleasure to be here, Don.
Well, let's do what I've been doing with the other reporters who've been appearing on the program, Dale. And what do you think has been the big story, the big story of the past year?
Well, I think the big story of the past year has been the story that kind of drew national and international attention, and that was what was going on in Columbia, both at the University of Missouri campus there and the University of Missouri system. It got a lot of attention. The attention, I guess, kind of galvanized when the football players said they're going to go on strike to support a hunger strike, and that certainly led to a very quick exit for two top administrators. But I'd been following what's been going on in Columbia for a little while, and it was simmering for a while, but it boiled over that weekend.
Yeah, this issue, the racial issue on the Columbia campus, is not a new issue.
No, it's been there for a long time. I mean, you know, people familiar with the history of the University of Missouri, they know the story of Lloyd Gaines, who was a young man who was admitted to the law school and then disappeared. Nobody knew what happened to him. I remember covering higher education in the 1980s for the Post-Dispatch, and there was a woman from St. Louis named Marriott Oldham, who was a black woman who was very vocal about minority rights, and she was on the board of curators, and mostly you kind of move up, and after a certain period of time, you take your turn as president, and they denied her a term as president. Her name and Lloyd Gaines' name are the ones that are on the Black Culture Center in Columbia. So the legacy is there, and it's been around for a while.
Do you have any sense that things are changing, that you see anything that has begun to happen that would change this dynamic?
Certainly the attention, the focus is there. I covered the University of Missouri Board of Curators meeting at the UMSL campus last week, and the new interim president, Mike Middleton, who's African-American, has been there on the campus for a long time. He certainly knows what has to be done. He knows where the attention has to be. The system, and particularly the Columbia campus, has been focusing in the last year or so on Title IX, which started when attention was called to sexual assault on campus, but now they've broadened that to be Title IX, diversity and inclusion. All the four campuses are going to have an officer in charge of that, plus there will be a system officer in charge of it as well. So the attention is there. Whether they can change the culture, whether they can change the attitudes that are so deeply entrenched, it will be another story that we'll be obviously keeping our eye on.
This is something you'll be looking at, obviously, during 2016. You know, Missouri in all of its campuses, also in the news because of what is affecting colleges all over the country, universities all over the country, that is money. Funding is a huge issue.
Oh, sure. They accepted a recommendation, at least discussed a recommendation last week, that there would be no tuition increase for students at the four campuses who live in Missouri for the coming school year 16-17. But they always, whenever they talk about this, they always have this little chart that they trot out that shows the trend lines. The tuition has been going up and the state support has been going down, both for higher education and for elementary and secondary education. The foundation formula for elementary and secondary education is $500 million less than it should be. So, yeah, people always say, well, you can't throw money at education. Well, maybe you can't throw money at education to solve it, but you can't do it very well without it.
All right. And the University of Missouri St. Louis has a particular crunch, it would seem.
Right. Their enrollment was hurt by Ferguson. There was a spillover effect. They've been trying to recover from that, but they've got a shortfall in their budget, and they're cutting corners wherever they can not cutting corners in quality, but cutting expenses.
Well, that brings us to North County, and I know a lot of your energy over the past year and longer has been focused on that part of our area with regard to schools, Normandy, Riverview Gardens, transfers, that sort of thing. Where are we with all of that right now?
Well, the transfer law was upheld by the state Supreme Court in 2013, and that meant that any school district that was unaccredited, which is Riverview Gardens and Normandy, any student who was living there could transfer to an accredited school, and that has happened for the last since the 13-14 school year. There have been two attempts in the legislature to fix the law or to change the law. Depending, some people say it doesn't need fixing; other people say it does. And both of those were passed by the legislature and vetoed by Governor Nixon. I'm starting to work on a story about new efforts that will be coming up in the legislature next year to try to change the law again. So the issue's not going away. But what was interesting at the state board meeting a couple of weeks ago, that when the new scores came out, both Riverview Gardens and St. Louis Public did very well, and they both asked the state board and the Department of Education if they could get an upgrade in their accreditation status. City of St. Louis schools wanted to be upgraded to from provisional to full accreditation, and Riverview Gardens wanted to be upgraded from unaccredited to provisional accreditation, and that would mean students would not have the ability to transfer. State board deferred any decision on that right away, but I'm sure it's going to be coming up again. Normandy is still in unaccredited territory, but they've shown some improvement as well. So it's going to be interesting to see whether or not they can sustain the improvement, which is one of the reasons the state board said they wanted to wait. They wanted to make sure that the one-year figures for the new test will be the momentum can keep going, or whether or not it was a one-time thing.
Aside from the impact it would have on transfers, what does accreditation actually mean to a district?
It's funny. It's a it's kind of like a seal of approval. It says we're doing what the state thinks a good accredited district should be doing. One of the saddest things that I've heard in a long time is when superintendents say, well, if you tell a student who's in an unaccredited district that, you know, they're in a failing school district, that leads a student to think he or she is failing. And they want to make sure that that students understand that it's not their fault necessarily that things are going poorly. There can be a lot of reasons that districts are doing poorly. But lack of accreditation is kind of a it tells people there's something not quite right. But even the accreditation system is undergoing review. With the passage of the new federal law, there will be new responsibilities for states in education, and there will be a hard look coming in the next several months to see whether or not the accreditation system has to change as well.
Well, you mentioned the new law just signed, I guess it was last week, and basically it did away with No Child Left Behind, which has been controversial. Will that have an impact here?
I think it will. No Child Left Behind came in under the administration of George W. Bush in 2002. And ever since it came in, it's been kind of, I don't want to call it a joke, but it's been widely derided by people. And the critics were kind of on both ends of the spectrum. There were people on one end of the spectrum who said it gave the federal government too much power over education, which should be a state and local a responsibility. And then there were other people on the other side of the spectrum that said it put too much emphasis on testing and over-testing and too many tests and pretests and pretests of the pretests to make sure that everybody could get the scores that they needed so they were showing adequate yearly progress and they could move toward the benchmarks that the state set out, and nobody was ever able to reach those. So the new student, Every Student Succeeds Act, which is what the new law is called that was signed by the president last week, the basic thrust is going to be move a lot of responsibility and a lot of authority over education from Washington back to the states. Now, the law is more than 1,000 pages long, so it's going to take a lot of work to see how exactly that's going to be implemented. But most people think that it's probably going to be a good thing.
Yeah, you've indicated that part of the problem, the criticism, was that teachers were spending a lot of time teaching for the test, and that certain issues, the humanities, if you will, were being kind of lost in the shuffle and swept aside. Do you think that's going to change, that there will be more emphasis on things other than the test?
That's a hard thing to say. I mean, I've never really complained about or when I hear people say it, you're teaching to the test, it's not necessarily a bad thing if the test is any good. If the test is truly a measure of what students should be learning, then teaching to the test is, to me, is fine. My wife was a teacher for a long time. She taught English, and she used to say, what really counts can't be counted. And you don't necessarily want to make the score on a test the one thing that determines how well a student is doing. So, you know, can you really tell whether a student understands King Lear by giving him or her a test? Probably not. So I think you're right that maybe this would reduce some of the emphasis on subjects where a test, particularly a standardized multiple choice type test, would work, and maybe it'll help renew some of the emphasis on humanities.
Returning to the North County situation for just a moment, do you sense any momentum or a total lack of thereof, perhaps, for any kind of consolidation in North County school districts or county school districts in general?
Probably not. I mean, people are very fiercely proud of their districts. I mean, a few years ago when they merged Wellston into Normandy, and there was a lot of worry about, well, you know, will the kids be able to get along? And they emphasized, well, you know, Normandy High School is actually within the city of Wellston and that sort of thing. And, you know, leaving aside whether or not you should, you know, merge two districts that are having some trouble academically, I don't really see that. You would get some economies of scale in terms of HR departments and things like that. But most districts have such a strong individual identity. I don't really see much movement for there.
Speaking of the kids getting along, how are they getting along, those kids who have been transferred? We both remember very clearly what happened out of the, I guess it was the Francis Howell School District, when it became apparent that Normandy kids and other kids were going to be bussed out there. Are they getting along okay?
You hear of surprisingly few stories of strife between resident students and transfer students in a lot of these districts. So I think that story may have been overblown that particular night that you're talking about. I remember it well, and there were some very, very vocal comments. I was also at the Francis Howell School Board meeting that took place after that, and nobody had a thing to say. So that was kind of an outlier, I think. And I think in general the students have gotten along fine.
Do we know, it may be unfair of me to ask you, how many kids are being transferred at this time? Do you know? Is there a number?
I think between the two districts it's probably down to about 1,000, which is maybe half of what it originally was. So both Normandy and Riverview Gardens have taken a financial hit because of this. So they're happy to see fewer students transferring for that reason. And they also, you know, nobody likes to basically be told, we don't like you, we're going somewhere else. So in both cases, they're trying to get the message across to the parents who live in the district. We may have had problems in the past. We've really turned things around. We're doing much better. Please give us another look.
The financial hit, of course, is the fact that they have to pay for both transportation and tuition for the students.
Right. And there have been efforts to try to reduce tuition on the part of the receiving districts. Some districts have said okay, some have not, but they said we'll give you help in other ways. But that was all part of those two legislative attempts to fix the transfer situation that the governor vetoed.
Union situations. Every year, which is predictable, is the Swallows at Capistrano. There are going to be strikes or the threat of strikes at the school year, beginning of the school year. And, of course, in East St. Louis this year, they got one.
East St. Louis strike lasted, I guess, about a month. And obviously the students, there were efforts to try to, you know, patch together ways that students can learn and students And in this situation, very important, students could get the meals that the school would normally provide. But, in Illinois, public school teachers can strike. In Missouri, they can't. So Missouri teachers really don't have that kind of leverage. They can try to do other things in the city of St. Louis, where the teachers just recently finally approved a contract. They were very vocal at the school board meetings, and they were trying to make it clear that they didn't think that the offer that the city schools was giving them was any good. But it's hard, I guess, if you don't have any leverage. What's going to be interesting to see is what goes on at the Grand Center Arts Academy, which is around the corner from where we are here. Mm-hmm. It's the first charter school where faculty members have decided to join a union. And that when that happens, it'll be interesting to see what comes of it.
And whether it snowballs, obviously, if that's going to just gain momentum for this whole notion. You know, it's interesting to read the newspaper of the day and see that the St. Louis City school teachers have signed for a one-time only, was a 2% raise, I guess it was, it's correct. And then you could turn to the sports page and find that some 25-year-old kid has just signed a $180 million contract.
Yeah, you don't – nobody goes into education to get rich.
Yeah. No, that's for sure. Achievement gap. We hear and have heard a lot, and you've written about the achievement gap in our area. What are you seeing there?
It's a very, very persistent problem. Every time I go to a school board meeting, either a district meeting or the state board meeting, they always call attention to the help and the special assistance that districts need when they have a large African-American population or large population of any subgroup, English language learners or homeless students or anything like that. And it's very hard. One of the big factors that determines success in school, and we've written about this for our website, is just attendance. I mean, you've got to be there if you're going to learn. And if you have problems at home, if you don't have a permanent address, that is really a factor that's going to make learning difficult. So a lot of school districts, you hear about wraparound services. In the Jennings School District, which has really been one of the successes, they just went from provisional accreditation to full accreditation. They've got anything like for a foster home to washers and dryers to all sorts of factors that they try to make sure that all the non-educational problems that a student may have can be eased as much as possible so that they can concentrate on their schoolwork. And that's one way to solve the achievement gap. Everything that you always read in every district superintendent that you talk to always emphasize, this does not mean that these children can't learn. It just means they're in a situation that makes learning more difficult.
You know, I think of that the For Sake of All report that came out, I guess it's been a year or so now, pointing to health issues and what an impact, a tremendous impact they can have on kids and staying in school, dropping out of school, or even learning in school. These are the kinds of things that people generally don't think about until it's brought to their attention.
We ask teachers to do a lot of things, and we ask school districts to do a lot of things. And on the one hand, it would be nice if they could concentrate on learning and concentrate on education. But since so many factors affect education, you really can't expect them to try to distance themselves from everything else and just concentrate what goes on in the schoolroom. Partnerships are very effective. I've been observing, you know, what's going on between Normandy and Beyond Housing. And that's that they do a lot to try to alleviate some of these problems, but they can't do it all.
I wonder if that's where we're going in a sense, is bringing corporations and private enterprise into the education system somehow. Funding scarce, and it's very important to the business community, for instance, to have a well-educated cadre coming up. Think there's going to be more involvement?
I wouldn't be a bit surprised, of course. And, you know, people always say, you know, if you're going to spend money on public education, then the public ought to have some say over how it's going to be spent. So if too much money comes from private sources, you're going to get not a backlash necessarily, but you're going to get increased attention paying to where is this money coming from and is it influencing public education in ways it shouldn't be. But I think you're right. In many ways, particularly if you can get non-governmental organizations and nonprofits more heavily involved in the schools, I think that would help.
What about charter schools? So give me some insight into the health of charter schools in our region.
Charter schools are growing in the St. Louis area. Bad ones are getting increased attention. Charter schools, which charter school people always, their favorite sentence is to remind people that charter schools are public schools. They're paid for with public money. They are designed to be an alternative, and the deal that they cut is you give us more autonomy and we will accept more accountability. And so far, the results have not always been better than the districts in which they're located, which are primarily St. Louis and Kansas City, although the law allows for expansion of that now. But it's been an alternative that many parents have taken advantage of.
And they're all associated with institutions of higher learning. I wonder what the impact and the influence of that is on the charter schools.
They have to fulfill whatever their sponsor, which are the college or university that's sponsoring them, whatever goal is set out there. And I think in most cases, the sponsoring institution does keep a close eye on it, maybe not as close as they should in some cases, as we've seen for some charter schools that didn't succeed. But you're right. It will help everybody, including the higher education institutions, if these charters succeed.
Do you think kids are better educated at charter schools than they are the other public schools?
It's such an individual question, both an individual school, the individual school district they would be going to, and the individual child. I really don't know how to answer that.
Okay. We've got about a minute left. What is on your radar screen right now looking ahead?
Looking ahead, I was just looking at these bills that were filed in the legislature to try to fix the transfer situation. And both those things and what's going to be going on at the state level. When Riverview Gardens asked for an upgrade in accreditation, the state said, we're not going to do it right away, but we're not going to wait till December, which we usually do. We're going to do it for you in July. So they're keeping a close eye on districts like that, and they're going to try to make sure to come up with rules that will be fair to evaluate them by.
The DESE, the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, is under new management. Has there been any perceptible change in its approach to anything?
No. The new commissioner, Margie Van Deven, was the deputy commissioner. So it's been pretty much a seamless transition.
What's your big headline for 2016?
Boy, oh
depends
boy.
On the legislature again, probably.
Well, not only that, yeah, the legislature, both for elementary and secondary and for higher education.
Yeah. All right. Well, Dale Singer, thanks so much for being with us and bringing us up to speed on your beat. You're a very busy guy, and it keeps you busy because there's a lot going on. Thanks
right.
so much for being with us. Hope you have a great holiday and a wonderful new year and a productive 2016.
Same to you. Thanks, Don.
Education reporter Dale Singer. Tomorrow in St. Louis on the Air, we'll get an update on what's happening at the Velodrome or bike racing track in the Penrose Park neighborhood. Then we'll talk about the top St. Louis area business stories of 2015. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.